When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I don't know if we've ever done this, but this week's classic is the second installment of our 2-part series on the Sony hack. And so much has happened since that I think a lot of people have forgotten just how weird this was and the kind of precedent it set for cyber warfare of the future.
Ah, yes. Just like the precedent our first episode on this topic set for how excited you are to be hearing this episode right now. But without any further ado, let's get into it.
From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Previously on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
Stay away from that dynamite. It's gonna blow.
The movie of terrorism must be stopped.
But what if someone tried to censor pants?
Hey guys, it's Jonathan Strickland. I'm from Tech Stuff, and I'm still in this room with you.
Yes, this is part 2 of our episode, so let's just hop in, Matt.
You know who we are. I'm Matt, that's Ben, this is Jonathan. We're having a great time, and it's getting hacky and kind of North Korea-y in here.
Yeah. Another thing to remember about this, something else that doesn't necessarily point the finger at North Korea, but to show the magnitude of this attack, it wasn't just that information was stolen. They wiped computers at Sony Pictures.
Right.
So people who came into work on that Monday, I read an interview with a guy.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't named, but he was an employee of Sony
Pictures. The aftermath of Sony.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Where he said, yeah, we come into work on Monday, we turn on our computers, we're working, suddenly all the computers go black. We figure there's just some sort of network error or something. We realize that there's a real problem and we go home not thinking it's a big deal because it was the week of Thanksgiving, which is a holiday week here in the United States.
Right.
So they went home thinking, oh, well, we'll just come back and it'll just be an extra long holiday. Wee, hooray for us. They come back the following Monday. There's still problems. And then they realize there could be a lot of personal information about the employees of Sony that was wrapped up as part of this attack. And it could involve things like insurance claims,
sure,
just really personal stuff that could impact real human beings who have real lives.
Social security numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, social security numbers. That means that opens the door for possibility of medical information. And I have a little bit of a theory about this stuff, but I'm going to hold it till we get through the rest of the story.
Okay.
On December 4th, North Korea officially denies any involvement in the Sony hack. Like Shaggy, an MC, some of the older members of our audience may remember, he said, it wasn't me.
No, right. He said, it wasn't me.
Wow, that's not bad. Hey, you know, Shaggy, right? Formerly a Marine as well.
Whoa.
What? I didn't see that coming.
Get on the ground.
It okay, wasn't sorry. Me.
but this, these leaked emails are still coming out. Journalists are all over this, scouring the documents. The spokesperson, now remember, we said that December 4th, right, North Korea officially says it wasn't me. And December 8th, however, a spokesperson for North Korea says the cyber attack might have been a righteous deed of supporters and sympathizers, but it wasn't directly linked to us.
Right.
Which is very similar to some of the stuff we've heard from state-sponsored cyber attacks via Moscow, via Beijing. And I'm sure that I'm sure that Uncle Sam's doing a couple too.
Stuxnet anybody?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Hey, that was officially not the United States.
Uh-huh. Right.
That's the old plank in the eye thing. Like, get the speck out of your eye, but there's a plank in mine.
Yeah.
Right. So this continues though.
Yeah. And then on December 9th, there was a message posted to GitHub, which was allegedly from the Guardians of Peace. Now, it is extremely difficult to verify whether or not an anonymous message like that is from the same person that posted the other anonymous thing.
This is like attributing anything to the group Anonymous.
Right.
Yes. Where Anonymous itself is not a cohesive group with a single leader. It's actually a sort of amorphous semi-organization, and you could even have one group of people within that organization want to do something,
sure,
and the
like
rest may not even be into it. Yeah. Exactly. So,
well, in that light, since we're not sure if this message came from the same people
that
you did the voice of,
yeah,
Ben, would you mind doing evil voice or
like an evil voice
or however you want to spin it?
Stop immediately showing the movie of terrorism, which can break the regional peace, then cause the war. See, I added that C at the end. We know nothing about the threatening email received by Sony staffers, see? But you should judge wisely by yourself why such things are happening and who's responsible for it. You, Sony, and FBI cannot find us.
Amazing.
So this supposed representative of Guardians of Peace denies knowledge of a previous message, also supposedly from Guardians of Peace.
Right.
But it's also for the first time in the messages from these guys saying, stop the movie of terrorism. It does not say the interview.
Right.
But it's specifically talking about a movie.
It also says stop immediately showing, and the movie hadn't come out yet.
Right. December 10th, though, they get this message gets a little bit of street cred courtesy of Joe Demarest, assistant director for the FBI's cyber division.
Yeah, he was talking at a cybersecurity conference when he said, quote, there is no, this is on December 10th, quote, there is no attribution to North Korea at this point. And he's speaking of the attack, the Sony hack.
Right. And it's been described by a private security firm named FireEye as an unparalleled, well-planned crime carried out by an organized group for which neither SPE nor any other companies could have been fully prepared. So that's Sony Picture Entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they say there's no way to prepare for this sort of level, this sort of cyber tsunami.
But they also discussed how they were criticizing Sony for their security.
Yeah.
They were saying that there were a lot of backdoors and essentially little, I don't know if you call them loopholes, but fairly easy ways of gaining access.
Sure. I mean, backdoors is probably the best way of putting it. Like, the two things you've got to worry about with your online security is just the value of the security system and then the value of the people who use it.
Right.
Those are the two elements.
Well, we know that, for instance, I love that you brought up Stuxnet earlier.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that was abundantly clear about Stuxnet, this was a program most likely created by Israel and the United States working together, right? And what it did was it altered the speed of centrifuges, I believe.
Yeah, in a nuclear processing facility.
Right, in Iran. And, and then screwed up the entire nuclear facility, or at least the process of refining this. Those computers, however, were offline, which means that the only way that Stuxnet could be introduced into that system would be, what, via USB drive, maybe?
Yeah, thumb drive of some sort or some other physical delivery system, which would mean getting physical access to those machines, which would mean either infiltrating the system entirely, as in having a like a cover agent going in and becoming part of this, or more likely using social engineering to get access, using just simple lying to people. It's really easy. If I walk into a company and I tell an overworked receptionist that I'm there because there was an IT issue that I need access to a certain floor, more 9 times out of 10, I get that access.
Really?
Know?
He does it all the time.
Oh, yeah. You do, John? Yeah.
Well, me personally? Why do you think I'm not at my desk so much during the day?
Hey, what happened to the old janitor, buddy?
That's
a really good point. The human element is often going to be what compromises a system.
Sure.
And we also know that Seth Rogen and James Franco, of course, have some stuff to say about this. I mean, I don't know if they still get paid if the movie doesn't come out the way it was supposed to.
I don't know if the full contract was released in the hacks. If it was, I have not read it. I just talked about the money that they made for the films. But one thing I do know is that they went on Howard Stern's show on the 15th of December. Mm-hmm. And in discussions with Mr. Stern, I just wanted to read this one quote from Seth Rogen. He says, "I can't do an impression of Seth Rogen. Man, I wish I could." All right.
"I believe in you, dude."
He says, "Now, no one has definitively told us that North Korea is who did that. One day I'm like, it's for sure them. And the next day I'm like, there's no way it's them. It seems too savvy of Hollywood politics." And he's speaking as a producer of the film.
Right.
You know, and director and writer. And when they were talking about this stuff, they were just speaking about some of the more insider information that was leaked. And why would they leak all of that stuff?
Why would North Korea care about that?
Right.
Why would North Korea be aware that that itself would be the key to causing action to happen? Mm-hmm. Especially since North Korea didn't, If it was in fact North Korea and the interview was in fact the reason for it, why wasn't that ever part of the messaging at the beginning?
The initial messaging.
Yeah.
Right. Why does the messaging seem to evolve? And speaking of evolving, we know in December 16th, they upped the stakes and specified the interview itself when they said that movie theaters showing this feature would be attacked, and I quote here, 9/11 style.
That is what they said.
And that, I mean, if you want to hit a hot button, like, nerve.
Yep.
In the American psyche,
right.
That's all you have to say.
And as Jon Stewart said, I had no idea that was a style now.
Right.
Well, And then you go back to our recent memory. You think about the Batman shooting at a movie theater.
Yeah, sure.
In Colorado. So,
yeah, and it kind of conjures a lot of images for...
Well, yeah, there have been actual acts of terror, depending upon, you know, how you look at the definition. But there have been acts of terror that have taken place inside movie theaters in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so this was a very evocative kind of message, and it's one that a lot of companies took very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
For understandable reasons. I mean, there was a lot of backlash for their actions, that action being that Carmike theaters began to cancel screenings of the interview, and that was followed by every other major theater chain, to the point where it looked like the only place you were going to see the interview for a while was going to be in these tiny little art house theaters, which is the weirdest thing in the world. This is a major film from a major motion picture studio that would only get seen in art house theaters. And then you don't even get that.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeart Radio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent, telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Sony announces the cancellation of the whole theatrical release. And mind you, this is after Carmike begins, sets off that domino effect.
Yeah, after they canceled the premiere on December 18th.
Right.
And not only did they announce the cancellation of the theatrical release, they went further than that. They said that this movie would not be released in any format. For at least the foreseeable future. So they were saying, at that time, they were saying, it's not going to come out in video on demand, because a lot of people said, why don't you just release it video on demand?
Right. Yeah, they can't attack us all 9/11 style.
And they're not going to come into our homes. But there's not going to be that. You could do it as, DVD or Blu-ray. But they were saying, no, we have no plans to release this film in any form.
And, Reddit even banned a couple of users. That's how you know stuff's getting real for, sharing some leaked documents. And I think for possibly trying to find the actual interview, the actual movie.
Remember back on the 10th, the FBI said there is no link.
No attribution.
Right.
Then on the 18th, and I hate to use this, quote, anonymous White House officials, but that's how The Guardian reported it. Anonymous White House officials say that the U.S. has evidence that the hack was coordinated by North Korea. Now, there's some words in there that they're a little vague, I think, on purpose.
Well, yeah, right. Coordinated could mean that North Korea could have been essentially the if you want to think about it, the money behind the attacks.
Right, the EP of the attack.
And then they essentially hire out or contract out hackers possibly in some place like China or Russia, where we know there are a lot of state-sponsored hackers already, and use them to perpetuate this attack. And then yet still could come out and say, hey, we didn't do it. You know? Yeah.
Right. And we see, and what's funny about the statement too, I think you make a great case for the word coordinated. Folks, ladies and gentlemen, whenever you read a report that says anonymous White House officials or a government official who did not want to be named, that means that they're giving a leak with the blessing of whichever institution they originate from. And also, it's meant to avoid some responsibility of an official statement. So that anonymous White House official who said that, everybody in the White House was like, yeah, that's fine. But you know, don't say your name. Don't say you said it.
Yeah, it's so weird how that works, the strategic leaking of information like that.
I wish I could strategically leak information like that.
I wish I could strategically leak. I've just been leaving a trail all over the house.
That's what that was.
So, so we've solved one mystery on the show already. We know that President Obama says he has a problem with Sony refusing to release the interview. You know, it's bowing to terrorism.
He made a full-on statement about it.
Yeah, so he officially says something later. Yeah.
Well, and this was the backlash I was talking about earlier, right? There were a lot of people who immediately criticized the theater chains for pulling it out, and then later criticizing Sony for saying that they were not going to release it under any format.
Right.
And these were people, and I include myself in this, who didn't necessarily have any desire to see the movie. They just didn't like the precedent this was setting. Mm-hmm. Now, personally, I didn't like the precedent of saying your threats are effective and therefore you can affect me, because 2014 was the year of the security breach.
Right.
You
know, yeah.
You had so many companies hit by different security breaches.
Home Depot, Microsoft,
eBay, Mt. Gox,
Target.
Well, that was technically 2013, but the fallout continued, and the CEO of Target stepped down in 2014 because of those. So we've had a whole year of security breaches, and then when you have this happen, and you have a non-specific threat come in. And then you see this dramatic reaction to it. The message that sends out to everybody, the perpetrators and everybody else, is that with some effort, you, an individual or small group of individuals, can impact an enormous number of people, an entire industry of people. And that opens the floodgates for people to say, well, heck, I could do that. I mean, even just for giggles, like I don't have any ideological problem with anybody, but the thought of being able to affect that many people is really appealing to a certain group of folks.
Yeah, I mean, how far away are we from a supervillain just co-opting YouTube and appearing and being like, you know, attention America, if you do not immediately reassemble the cast of Night Court, there will be grave consequences.
Yeah, I'm going after PewDiePie. That's what I'm just going to appear in front of all of PewDiePie's videos.
Oh boy.
Don't
do it. No, I would never do that.
Well, I'd just like to say that it's not releasing this movie at all, if that is indeed what happens, which it doesn't seem to be going to happen.
Yeah, we'll get there.
But if they did that, then it would be effectively paying a $47 million ransom or however much it costs to create the film, plus whatever money they would have made opening day on Christmas when everybody goes to see movies.
Yeah.
And having to cancel those public appearances too.
Oh yeah, like Tonight Show, they didn't go on there, all those things. It's just crazy to think if you cave to this, just what you're giving up.
And the FBI comes back around, and now we're getting closer and closer to the present day, because they say in a statement released on Friday, this is via The Guardian, the FBI said a technical analysis of the malignant software, known as malware.
just hurts me.
Used in the attack has been linked to other malware that the FBI knows North Korean actors previously developed. There were similarities in specific lines of code, encryption algorithms, data deletion methods, and compromised networks, the FBI said. I like how they explain malware, but not encryption algorithms.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't really explain malware.
Malware. You know, that's what we used to call viruses. Yep. I use that accent because it was The Guardian. So.
So there's another interesting phrase here. North Korean actors, this is all a slow build toward my theory. North Korean actors, that's not necessarily a member of the North Korean government.
No, it could just be someone who appears in a theatrical production of The Mikado in North Korea.
Or performs in the Arang Festival.
Or one super adamant North Korean dude who's just like, no, you can't have that movie.
So, yeah, this is also something else I should point out is that code, whether or not it originates in a particular country, doesn't belong there. Like, as soon as it gets out in the wild, it's out there. And,
right.
And people will make use of whatever works.
So it's possible to impersonate code.
It's impossible to appropriate code and then use it for your own purposes. In fact, there are hackers out there, and I use hackers very loosely in this sense, that don't ever write any code themselves.
Script kiddies.
They get hold of code that's been previously written and they repurpose it for something else. And often they do it with minimum alteration or maybe no alteration at all. This is a great way of saying how the Sony hack was inherently different from the DDoS attacks that brought down Microsoft Xbox Live during the same time frame, because that was a simple DDoS attack, which I was telling Matt earlier. That's kind of like the equivalent of me walking up to one of you while you're trying to work and go, "Hey, what you doing? What you doing? Hey, what you doing? What you doing? What you doing? What you doing? What you working on? What you doing?" And just doing that all day long, you can't get anything done because I'm irritating you.
You can't
more so than normal.
Every request, either.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happens with a DDoS attack. Well, that's a very unsophisticated attack, right? It's just throwing a hammer at somebody. This attack was much more robust, much more, it involved way more levels than just a DDoS attack.
It's much more sophisticated.
Exactly.
This is like sneaking in at night, setting up and booby trapping your entire house.
Yeah.
And then waiting till you're at work the next day and just setting it off.
It's Home Alone.
It's Home Alone.
It's Macaulay Culkin possibly involved. No, he was not involved.
What was that kid's name? Kevin? Was he Kevin in Home Alone?
Yeah, I think so.
So now we know what Kevin's doing. He's hacking.
Yeah, he's hacking into Sony Pictures.
He's getting his revenge in Hollywood for Home Alone 3.
Home Alone 7 is what he's looking for. But no, I mean, this is the reason why I bring all that up is that it is possible that someone could be using code that does, in fact, have code coming from North Korea and not be connected to North Korea.
Yeah,
it's also possible the other way. So.
Or maybe using it on purpose because it did come from North Korea.
It could be.
And in the murky world of espionage, those kind of things are not impossible. I mean, I don't know if they are possible. I think it's a leap to say they're plausible. But what about this? Here's an interesting statistic. North Korea has about 1,000 email addresses. And for comparison, you can find about that many, according to a recent story by NPR, you can find 1,000 email addresses in maybe a block of New York City.
Yeah, I mean, I've got like 40 or 50 myself.
That's true.
Wow. That's probably an exaggeration.
Right. So on the whole, the North Korean population is not full of, you know, tech literati.
Well, they're most of them are not allowed to have any connection to the internet. There's a couple of other interesting points that have kind of unraveled over the last couple of days as we record this. One is that the internet in North Korea suffered some major slowing down to the point where people were saying no one would be able to connect. And that raised questions. And we don't have answers for this. It raised the question of, is this at all connected to this Sony hack? Was it a retaliation? Because there was a statement of there would be a proportional response to any attack that was against the United States. So how do you, what's proportionate to having a company have this?
What North Korean film company do you go after?
Do you shut down the military and government access to the internet? Because that's pretty much the only people in North Korea who have the access we're talking about. Or was it some totally unrelated group that decided to take it upon themselves? Kind of the way North Korea was saying, hey, it wasn't us, but whoever it was, you guys are awesome. So is it the same thing, but now going against North Korea? Or could it just be a system failure that has nothing to do with any of this? And the pure answer is that we do not know. Only the people who would be responsible would know if, in fact, someone's responsible.
Wow. No, there's also the possibility that due to international tensions between the triumvirates here of North Korea, China, the United States, we should also add South Korea and Japan.
There's
a possibility that this might be handled in backdoor channels differently than it's handled in the public sphere. And this is something that quite often happens in dealings between North Korea and many other countries. And I know this because during the last round of failed nuclear talks, a North Korean a member of the North Korean Foreign Ministry and his entourage visited the school I was at the time. And their conversation was completely different, worlds away from what you would see on North Korea's official website, which you can visit and is in English and Korean.
Yeah, he was telling me about that.
Well, I don't know if you want to read it.
I mean, I think part of that is like, you know, the idea of saving face, right?
Yes, absolutely.
It's the whole idea of how can we diffuse the situation where no one looks like they are backing down.
Right, or apologizing, mm-hmm. Yeah. or weak. No one can look weak.
Speaking of that, on December 19th, we were talking about this, Jonathan. Mm-hmm. North Korea offered to set up a joint inquiry with the United States to find out who was behind this hack.
Yeah, they said, we don't approve of all the things that have happened. We
right.
do think that they had a noble goal in the sense that this movie is an insult, but we weren't responsible, and we will help you find out who is. And the United States said, thanks, no thanks. But, but here's the thing. There are so many different layers here, right?
Right.
Yes.
The layer of, there's the perception of whether or not North Korea is being sincere in its offer, whether they are trustworthy, whether we genuinely believe North Korea to be behind the attacks. And we in this room can't say whether right. or not the U.S. government genuinely believes that. One of the things that came up in the discussion Matt and I had was that a lot of the there's no smoking gun
right.
pointing from North Korea for this particular incident that we are aware of, but that doesn't mean there isn't one.
Absolutely.
There could be one that the FBI is fully aware of, but has not made at all public. And therefore they could be completely sincere when they say, we believe North Korea to be behind this.
Right. And what would the relationship be? I love that point because there is not an easy black and white answer. I have a little bit of a theory, if you guys would like to hear it.
I would Absolutely. Love to hear your theory. Right, I've got great. A theory of my own, so.
I got Excellent. One too.
So, Japan, right, has a.
I've heard of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're familiar with its work. Japan has a large ethnic Korean population, some of whom are DPRK sympathizers.
Mm-hmm.
And DPRK has to add a little bit to its muddy reputation abroad. It's often been found as the ringleader for illegal activities such as smuggling or creation of methamphetamine, creation of the so-called super notes, which were fake $100 bills that were really, really well done. And it is completely possible that one or more ethnic Koreans working in Japan work for Sony and open the door, or there was some sort of exploit that was passed along to hackers. What I don't think happened. I just don't think that, given all of the other concerns that DPRK has right now, and it has a lot, the relationship with the Soviet Union is pretty much, well, the relationship with Russia is pretty much non-existent.
Right.
The relationship with China is deteriorating,
mm-hmm.
Especially in the wake of Kim Jong-il's death. I think this was maybe state approved, but I don't think it was state spearheaded.
Okay.
If it was, the priorities have to be way off. It's not necessarily the behavior of a rational actor unless there's more to the story. So I think what we're looking at would be contractors, maybe sympathetic hacktivists of some sort, because there are, even though a lot of people don't know this, there are quite a few, sympathetic North Korea sympathizers in South Korea, in Japan, some of who are legit spies, but many of whom just grew up there and are just supportive of it. Fun fact, the webmaster from North Korea is from Spain. He is a Spanish national.
That's really cool.
And North Korea has 3 web hosts, so I think it's much more likely that this attack originated from a country with better equipment.
I agree with that. I think I'll go a step further.
Mm-hmm.
Based upon the fact that we see no real mention of the interview, the movie of terrorism, in these early attempts where it seems like it's more of extortion.
Right.
Pay us or this stuff gets released. Not stop doing this horrible thing. There's no, like, the reason why we're doing this is because of this. Now give us money or else
yeah,
we'll release it.
Yeah.
None of that was there. I think that this, to me, it seems like it could be at least partially an inside job.
Mm-hmm.
That, like you were saying, it's someone who is familiar with Sony systems. A lot of the information I've read seems to indicate that the attackers at least had some password access to certain systems.
Yeah.
At the get-go, mm-hmm. which is not the easiest thing to get unless you already have it.
Because they went through multiple systems to get this information.
So I'm thinking that it was at least partially an inside job. Probably not directly related to anything with the interview at the beginning. It was only, to me, it seems like that was a leap on opportunity after other people started bringing it up. They're like, oh, wow, crap. We should totally say that's the reason.
Oh, we definitely that.
Yeah. Oh, that was our plan the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like that, right?
Now, again, this is based on the information that's available to us, right? And
right.
So we're drawing some conclusions based upon limited amounts of information. If this were Office Space, we would have the leap to conclusions mat out and we would be jumping away.
That's true.
So I want to stress that, because even though that's something that I personally kind of have a gut feeling about, I'm also more than happy to, I'm ready to say, look, I could totally be wrong and it would not take a lot to prove that I'm wrong. However, just from my own perspective, this whole time, I've been a little skeptical of the North Korea connection. I guess it could be like a North Korea approved thing or even a North Korea sponsored thing, but it seems like the actual attack and the language used as extortion at the beginning and the method of embarrassing the company comes from a much more insider perspective than another country
Absolutely.
That's upset.
It Absolutely. Seems personal to me.
Yeah.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts.
6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety Archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So then we've got some other possibilities here, right, Matt?
You're not going to let me have my theory? You guys had your theories.
No, that was the intro to your theory.
Oh, man. Thank you for introducing my theory. I apologize. So I want to bring in the overall digital rights management arguments and arguments.
This is someone who's upset that they put in a Sony CD way back in the day that created a backdoor attack on their computer.
No.
Okay.
It's the idea of
this guy has been harboring a grudge since 1994.
Oh, yeah, it's true. I mean, no. So the idea of stricter controls over the internet that have been attempted to be put into legislation in the United States several times and shot down spectacularly by the internet a couple of times.
Yeah, Sony execs are talking about it in the leaks, right?
They were talking about it in the leaks, and the MPAA in general trying to work kind of against Google. I don't know if you've seen anything about
Google.
This.
Goliath.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Goliath.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Be cool.
Sorry.
No, I haven't seen any of this. Can you tell me more about it? Tell me more about Goliath, Matt. Tell the tech guy more about Goliath.
Okay. Well, this is the main reason I wanted you to be in this room, besides having all the other knowledge, Jonathan.
Sure.
To talk about Goliath, because I don't know enough about it. I've barely touched the surface on it, and Ben and I will have to do another full show just on that subject.
Absolutely.
So there is, to me, and this is just Matt Frederick's opinion, everybody. Mm-hmm. This seems like an opportunity, whether or not who did it doesn't matter, an opportunity for those people who want stricter controls and security controls over the internet and search controls through Google for pirated material and all this stuff. It seems like a great opportunity for them to really say, hey, guys, look at all the damage this caused. Look at all the monetary and personal just damage that's been caused here. We need your help. Please secure the internet for freedom.
This is absolutely what's going to happen. You're going to see lots of companies that have a vested interest in keeping their intellectual property private from, jumping at every single possible opportunity to do so, to protect themselves,
right,
even at the expense of the ability for the rest of us to use the internet the way we've become accustomed to. However, that being said, it's a very difficult argument to make from that perspective, simply because the damage that was done to Sony went well beyond a few movies being leaked to the internet.
Right.
In fact, if you were to argue that that was the major cost of the damages, everyone would laugh at you, because, you know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars, mm-hmm, potentially. And, you know, we've had this discussion before too, that a stolen movie doesn't necessarily mean a lost ticket sale. Mm-hmm. Like, one, you can't guarantee that the person wouldn't go and see it anyway, or two, that the person would have seen it had they not pirated it. That's another argument. I think that it's one of those things that's going to ramp up the discussion about internet security. It's going to end up having a lot of companies propose changes that would be restrictive. But I don't think it's going to go much further than that. And part of the reason for that is also that we have simultaneously going on, while this hack is unfolding, the ongoing discussion about reclassifying internet in the United States as a utility, which would give the FCC the authority to actually impose net neutrality rules, which were struck down at the beginning of 2014.
Well, yeah, but the problem there is going to be job security. I mean, who's the FCC going to work for? Like, the individuals in the FCC have to think about their career trajectory.
Right. They have to figure out where am I going to get those huge bags of money that have been left at my I mean, back stoop.
You can't walk around with an empty burlap sack and a cash sign on it.
If anyone from the FCC is listening, I don't necessarily ascribe to this scenario that Mr. Boland is putting forward.
I'll get the email where they'll say, "Don't release this podcast, or you will be destroyed."
Yeah. No, the podcast of terrorism.
Yeah. Do you understand how the internet works? It's already out there.
Right. Right. Oh, no. I know. I'm ribbing the FCC a little bit, and the people at that agency have at times done fantastic work, and it can be really difficult when there's so much money involved. Let's talk about Project Goliath, though, because you're really interested in this, and it's a strange actual conspiracy, not a theory,
yeah,
but a group of individuals coming together to make a move on what they call Goliath.
Yeah, using code words.
Whatever that is.
Well, I mean, you got to use code words because you never know when your communications are going to get leaked.
True.
To the public. And if you are not covering your tracks and everyone automatically knows you're talking about Google, then, and granted, the secrecy, the veil of secrecy that Goliath provided was not terribly thick.
I mean, all of Jonathan's emails are in code, right?
Yeah. That's why, you know, the subject Red Dog flies at one. You're like, oh, it's that art I asked for that article.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a, and hey, it's a red dog flying at 1 o'clock.
I thought it was lunch. I thought we were getting hot dogs, but
you know,
sorry.
I always eat at like 11:30. I eat early.
Yeah, that's Red Dog at 11:30.
Yeah. So that's Red Bull at 11:30. So the Goliath story is only partially related, partly because some of the information was gathered from this leak.
Right.
But it is a collection of different really big entities.
Yeah,
mostly.
Universal, Sony, Fox.
Yeah, that are all concerned. Disney is in there too, I believe. Mm-hmm. Concerned about Goliath's influence on mm-hmm. their industry and how they can somehow mitigate that. And you're right. There'd be a whole episode. We'd have to go into a whole episode to really talk about it.
Well, maybe this is where we kind of tease that sometime in the future, we're going to have a Goliath episode.
Yeah. Would you like to come back for that?
Sure. I'd love to.
We'd love to have you because, this is an interesting thing. And I want to just do the quick and dirty in the interest of fairness thing that we have to say. Sure. Goliath, and I can't finger quote hard enough there, and the studios opposing it along with the MPAA have differing goals, but it's not so much a moral argument on either side as it is which environment is better for our current business.
Yeah.
So it's
not
like there's a hero and a villain.
Google's slogan is don't be evil, but it is a business. And we are the product. Just like in Facebook, you are the product. Same thing with Google. I mean, Google is not a search engine company. It's an ad company.
But Jonathan, isn't money the root of all evil? I swear somebody said that.
No, I think that's a dead press song.
You are wrong. It is the love of money that is the root of all evil. Money itself is not the root of all evil.
Wait, but what if, okay, then what is?
Quote correctly.
I'd like to point out while you're percolating on that one, I'd like to point out that don't be evil is a very, very different statement from be good.
Sure. You could be totally amoral.
Right.
Yeah, isn't that weird that is the,
it's up there with the pursuit of happiness.
Don't be evil.
Well, to be fair, though, I mean, we're making it sound really, really sinister, but keep in mind
that's what we do here, John.
It was a couple of college students who started Google, and they were trying to keep in mind certain values as this thing they had created ballooned well beyond even their ambition. I mean, they are really smart, really hardworking guys. But I think they'd be the first to tell you, like, you know, if you went back in time and told Sergey and Larry, hey, guys, this thing you're working on is going to turn you into multi-billionaires, they'd look at you and say, what? I mean, like, this is going to take up a sizable part of a city in California. I've been to the Google campus. It is enormous. Mm-hmm. You've got to have a car or a bike to get around from building to building because that's how big it is. And this is one company. Yeah, it's one of those things where I think they created that slogan at a time when they were just trying to, keep themselves grounded.
Right.
It's just now, with the benefit of hindsight, now that we see Google as this enormous entity, don't be evil starts to take on a different connotation to us.
So
we just got to remember the perspective.
So I want to add one more thing to the fire here.
All right.
Do you think that the people responsible for the 2011 hack were also involved in this one? Could there be an inside person who just hasn't been caught? HR, check your employment records.
Yeah, I mean, you never say never. It just seems to me like this was something that if I stick with my insider theory,
yeah,
it feels to me like this was something that had been building up for a while.
Okay.
For the person or persons responsible. And there was something that was a tipping point that caused the person to say, like, all right, that I'm doing it. I'm not gonna let this happen anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of working with a company that has these policies. Now, again, that only works if it fits my theory of what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It could obviously be something totally different that is, I'm completely off base for, and then my answer doesn't make sense.
I mean, yeah, if we're with lack of information, I think it's plausible that there was an inside person. But I'm also very curious about the evolution of this North Korean conversation, because the FBI seems pretty publicly convinced.
And I told Matt, I said, this could be indicative of one of two things in my mind. One is that they, in fact, do have very compelling evidence that we are just not aware of,
right,
and that North Korea is, in fact, responsible.
Or they can't release it because they illegally gathered it.
Right. Whatever the reasoning behind it, they have it, they know it, and we just can't be privy as to how or why.
The second part is really compelling to me.
The second idea is that the FBI releases this information in an effort to actually lure out the people who really did do it.
Yeah.
The idea being that, well, if we put pressure on this group by saying that it is North Korea, then North Korea is going to respond in a very antagonistic way. It's going to escalate matters. It's going to start bringing a lot more pressure on the group actually responsible. And I don't know about you, but if I were a hacker and I had caused this kind of chaos, at first I'd be thinking, man, look at what a bad hacker I am, man. Look at what I affected. And then as it would snowball, I'd think, whoa, things are getting out of control. And then I get to the point where there are people talking about using words like war and terrorism,
yeah,
I'm thinking, this went way out of proportion of what I was expecting. I wanted to cause this company problems, but I didn't want to capitulate the world into war.
I have become death.
So then you have this FBI group saying, well, you know, it's clearly North Korea. Meanwhile, they're thinking, all right, let's see who squirms.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Let's see which dog barks.
Guys, I'm so happy that we covered this.
Yeah.
I know, especially for Ben and I, it's a little different because we generally don't cover things that are happening now. Like, this is still happening. There's going to be a ton more information that comes out.
By
Nothing
the time
is definitive.
You hear this, there may be evidence that ends up making a lot of the things I said moot.
It was Bhutan the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh. The king of Bhutan.
But thank you so much for joining us for this conversation, everybody.
Thank you.
And especially Jonathan.
Yeah, where can people see more of your stuff, Jonathan?
Well, they could go to, if you want the super optimistic, happy version of the future, you should go to fwthinking.com. That's forwardthinking.com. That's where I look at the future in all different aspects, not just science and technology, but culture. And it is, kind of the bright, shiny version, not the dark, gloomy version. If you want the dark, gloomy version, sometimes I cover that on my other show, Tech Stuff, which is a podcast you can subscribe to. It publishes twice a week.
Ben has been on several times.
Ben has been on several times, yes. We did an excellent episode about ambulances. We've had a lot of positive feedback from people in the industry on that one.
Wow, thanks.
Yeah, it's great. And then also you can catch me on Brain Stuff and What the Stuff, where I end up being a dude on video who talks about things in weird locations occasionally.
Yeah.
And you can visit those sites at How Stuff Works YouTube page. There's a great one you did recently for Brain Stuff on old-timey voices.
That was a ton of fun. The transatlantic accent. Mm. And it got a lot of really great feedback. It was featured quite a few times in different places. And also, keep an eye out. There will be a What the Stuff that comes out in which Ben and I both appear in the same episode.
Oh, yeah. I just saw that picture. That's going to be a weird one. So speaking of feedback, we would love to hear your take on the North Korea, the alleged North Korea hacks in Sony. So find us on Facebook and Twitter, where we are Conspiracy Stuff. Check out our podcast on our blog or iTunes. however you get there.
And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.